Hello, and welcome to the Clinical Care Options Infectious Disease Podcast. I'm your host, Jacqueline Meredith. In our series of RSV, today's episode focuses on clinical presentation and on the importance of early identification. Joining me are our expert faculty, Dr. Angela Branch, Associate Professor of Medicine at the University of Rochester, New York, and Dr. Helen Chu, Associate Professor of Medicine at the University of Washington in Seattle. For the full online educational program, including downloadable slides and other podcasts in this series, please visit the link in the show notes for this episode. Now let's get started and hear what our expert faculty have to say about this topic.
So RSV reinfection is actually possible throughout life, and that's really the result of the fact that once you have your first primary infection in early childhood, you do develop immunity, but that immunity is partial and it won't protect you from a reinfection throughout your life. In fact, we've done studies where we've seen that people can become reinfected as quickly as 2 months after having recovered from their last infection, and this was done with various different challenge studies. And so what kind of disease you have will really be driven largely by your risk factors for severe disease. So in healthy younger adults, very oftentimes when they are reinfected with RSV in their early 20s and their 30s and their 40s, they may just present with an upper respiratory tract infection that will present with maybe a mild cough, some nasal congestion, headache, voluminous rhinorrhea that is sometimes very often happening. And there may be some sputum production, although it's usually unusual with a purely upper respiratory tract infection. On average, in about 5 to 7 days, if they're going to develop a lower respiratory tract infection, that's when it'll present. So about 5 to 7 days after they start developing symptoms, then the disease might progress to the lower respiratory tract. And this is when adults will present to your office or an emergency room or in the hospital with more severe symptoms. A fever is rare with RSV, or at least more rare than it is with influenza, but it can happen. You often will find your patients are dyspneic. Many of them will require oxygen supplementation. In fact, oxygen supplementation requirement is more often seen with RSV infections requiring hospitalizations than even with influenza. And what's characteristic about RSV that sometimes differentiates it a little bit from other viruses is that often you'll hear wheezing and rails on many patients, even if your patients don't have underlying cardiopulmonary disease, meaning they don't have chronic bronchitis, they don't have asthma, and yet still for whatever reason, RSV, because of the immune responses that it stimulates, does cause a lot of airway inflammation that results in wheezing in people who otherwise don't normally wheeze. And so progression typically will cause acute bronchitis, in which case you might have a normal chest x-ray and then you'll just hear those wheezing on exam and see some dyspnea and a productive cough, or it may actually result in pneumonia, in which case about 40% of those hospitalized with lower respiratory tract disease will have radiologic evidence of pneumonic changes, usually ground glass opacities, usually bilateral. Very rarely will you see things like consolidation. And something that often gets missed is that even if RSV infection itself causes a cold, in older adults who have underlying cardiac and pulmonary conditions, specifically things like congestive heart failure, asthma, and COPD, after they've recovered from the infection, because of the inflammation that was caused by the RSV infection, they will often have, or they may go on to have, an exacerbation of that underlying cardiac or pulmonary disease. And so they may present not with a runny nose or a cold, but with an exacerbation of their congestive heart failure or their COPD, which is the thing that you'll be treating at that point. So why does RSV exacerbate cardiac and pulmonary conditions? RSV replicates both in the respiratory tract as well as in cardiac tissue. And those sites of inflammation was what can often lead to some of the morbidity and mortality associated with RSV. RSV infection has been in the setting of increasing age will lead to increased release of pro-inflammatory cytokines in these specific tissue tracts. So in the respiratory tract and cardiac tissue, which can lead to things like hypercoagulable states, plaque defibrillations. And so there's been work done that has shown that RSV can be associated with increased risk of MIs, increased risks of unstable angina, increased risks of even arrhythmias like atrial fibrillation, in addition to some of the things that sort of make sense, like congestive heart failure and COPD. And again, this is related to the inflammation within those specific tissues that's being caused by the RSV infection. It's also important to understand that having underlying cardiac and pulmonary disease may increase risk of not just severe RSV infection and disease, but also may have some long-term impact on survival. after being hospitalized with an RSV infection. So this is a really interesting study that looked at one-year survival following admission with an RSV infection for those who had and did not have underlying congestive heart failure, as well as those who did and did not have underlying chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So the Kaplan-Meier curve here on the left side of the slide is looking at those with and without congestive heart failure. And then on the right side is looking at those with and without COPD. The green line are those who have congestive heart failure and also had an exacerbation of that congestive heart failure related to their RSV infection. The red line are those who have congestive heart failure but did not have an exacerbation. And the blue line are those without congestive heart failure baseline at all. And as you can see, where survival decreases going in this direction, having had an underlying history of congestive heart failure, as well as exacerbation of that CHF after RSV infection, did lead to poor survival outcomes, which continue to increase as far out as 12 months after admission. Interestingly, they didn't see the same relationship between having exacerbation of COPD in the setting of an RSV infection. It's not necessarily true for all cardiopulmonary diseases, but seems to be something that might be more significant with cardiac diseases rather than pulmonary ones, which is something that we don't always think about. And for some specific outcome data that might be helpful, when you look at some things in those hospitalized with RSV, like the use of mechanical ventilation, need for supplemental oxygen, length of stay, ICU admission, again, it's very similar to flu. And in fact, you might even see slightly higher rates of hospitalizations in older adults, slightly higher rates of ICU admissions, slightly higher rates of mechanical ventilation and the need for supplemental oxygenation, and even the length of stay can be a little bit longer. And lastly, in the populations that we're talking about, specifically older adults, it's also important to remember that death is not necessarily the worst outcome. It's the one we look at the most frequently and the one that we think as being most severe when we talk about what happens after hospitalization with RSV. But if you talk to your older adult patients, they'll tell you that loss of function and loss of independence is equally as important to them.
So there are many diagnostic challenges that come along with figuring out if your patient has RSV infection. The first is that many cases, especially in primary care, go undiagnosed for a variety of reasons. Most likely, it's because many internists don't think of RSV as an adult pathogen, that really it's thought to be something that causes children to have bronchiolitis to be admitted to the hospital, but really not thought of as an adult pathogen. But now that people are doing more and more diagnostic testing, and particularly multiplex diagnostic testing, I think it's becoming increasingly recognized that it can be the cause of pneumonia and CHF and COPD exacerbations. And one in the study that was recently done, it was shown that only a third of admitted patients who were eventually diagnosed with RSV were swabbed and tested for RSV using a molecular test on admission. And this really goes to this underlying problem of people not just being aware that RSV can also cause disease in adults. There are a variety of other testing challenges with RSV. The first is that people tend to present a little bit later in illness, that they wait. It starts with an upper respiratory tract infection, and by the time it progresses to the lower tract, and people come in to see their physician or come to the ED, they really may not even have evidence of virus in a nasal swab, that they will not be able to have a diagnosis made at that time. There's also a lack of incentive to diagnose RSV because there's currently no dedicated treatment. That landscape is actually changing significantly. Antigen tests, which are a test that we often use for testing for RSV in children, is really very poorly sensitive in adults. And the reason why is because you need to have a high viral load for an antigen test to be positive. And adults tend to come in with several days after symptom onset. And at that point, they either have very little virus or no viral detection in the upper respiratory tract, making antigen tests not a good choice for diagnosis. PCR tests are relatively expensive. They also have turnaround times that have traditionally been very long, making it difficult to use in an urgent care and emergency department setting where you may want to have a rapid diagnosis. And also there has been in the past confusion about the testing site, whether or not you can use a throat swab or a nasal swab, whether or not you need an NP swab for diagnosis.
Okay, great. So this next section is going to be pretty straightforward because RSV treatment for adults is mainly supportive. So you're going to do what you normally do for people who have viral infections other than influenza, where there's an antiviral. You give antipyretics, you give supplemental oxygen for those who are hospitalized and are dyspneic with hypoxia. You give IV fluids as needed. One thing you don't do is you won't want to give inhaled or systemic corticosteroids or bronchodilators to anyone that's wheezing. You really want to save these treatments for your older patients and patients with pre-existing pulmonary conditions, such as asthma and COPD, with wheezing, for whom you know that these medications will work. So this is someplace where I think we, as providers, can continue to just be a little bit more streamlined so that we don't prescribe things that potentially have side effects and may not be beneficial to our patients. The other thing is antibiotics are not indicated. The exception would be if there's a secondary bacterial infection, which does present in about 10 to 30% of RSV infections in hospitalized adults. But that still means that the vast majority of them really are just viruses, which again, is something we struggle with because we know the risk factors of having a bacterial pneumonia. And so it's hard sometimes to imagine that someone that comes in with clear pneumonia on chest x-ray, that it's entirely due to RSV, but it happens more times than not. And again, bacterial complication rates in the community is not as well studied, but it's probably fairly similar, if not less than that in hospitalized adults. So make a diagnosis of RSV. Why improve RSV awareness in general? Why does it matter if we don't have a good antiviral? I think knowing that your patient has RSV and just having a good sense of RSV disease and prevalence in your practice and in your community will help guide global care for your patient. It really allows you to counsel your patients on complications, particularly some of the things that they may not think about, like how is this going to affect my underlying heart and lung disease, as well as how long will it really take me to recover? And can my family member do well on their own in the next month, or do I need to keep a closer eye on them? It allows you to avoid unnecessary testing. When you know it's RSV, you don't have to worry about looking for other things like urinary tract infections or doing echocardiograms. It allows you to avoid treatments that may not be beneficial and may in fact even be harmful. It'll be very helpful if we did have antivirals, and hopefully we will soon, because anything that helps our patients get better quicker is definitely something to work towards. And lastly, it's very likely that there will be available vaccines in the next few years. And so having a global awareness of RSV in general in your practice and in the United States and globally really help us to measure the effectiveness of these new strategies.
Thank you very much to our faculty, and thank you for our listeners for joining in. Please be sure to check back for more episodes on important infectious disease topics. Thank you and have a great day.